Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Thanks for being here today. Guess there's not as many people out on the road right now as normally, right? Unless, well, I don't know.
I saw a lot of people playing today on the way into the studio.
Yeah, so we probably don't have the 42 listeners we normally have.
Probably a 50% decline.
Yeah,
we're at about 20.
Yeah,
it's back to when we were doing a weekend morning show.
Yeah, there
we've
go.
Got about two listeners was our.
But
our
the cool thing is the podcast is getting lots of hits nowadays. We're getting some traction there, which is fun. So thank you for being. It's a holiday today.
Not for us.
No, for everybody else. And hopefully you're enjoying it. And thank goodness the Houston tragedy is not all the way behind us at all, but at least the rain has stopped there. Now we just have fires everywhere in California. You guys been keeping tabs on that?
A little bit, yeah.
Wow, amazing. I don't know how many we've got, but it's just like a lot going on right now. But San Diego, we're pretty safe. Everything seems to be going okay. We have a great show for you. We're going to talk first in just a minute with a guy named James Heller. He's the CEO of a company called Rappify. You've seen the cars and the vans that drive around with the ads on them. They're wrapped up and they've got these advertisers on them. And the people that want to get their message out, put wraps around cars. This is a company that does this. Drive, earn, live. It's a pretty cool motto. Rappify will come up in just a second. After that, Clay Malugin is with us. He is with Water Pigeon. Fascinating story. The technology they've got that, let me think how to say this. It effectively enhances the ability for water companies to deliver accurate information in real time. You're going to hear about some technology that makes so much sense when you hear what they're doing. You just would never think to do it, but these guys did. So Water Pigeon will be up second half of the show. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Let's get right to our first guest. James Heller's with us, CEO of Rappify. James, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking time out of your holiday to be with us. Appreciate
Likewise.
It.
Likewise. This is great.
Tell us about Rappify.
So Rappify is an ad or a tech-enabled ad platform that pays everyday drivers to advertise on their car. We're live in 30 markets across the U.S. We put campaigns on the road for brands like Anheuser-Busch, eBay, Petco. And, you know, we have upwards of 50,000 drivers active on our platform today.
How many?
50,000 drivers that have downloaded the Rappify app.
Whoa. Now, okay, so we're talking about wrapping a car, but you just mentioned 50,000 people have downloaded a Rappify app. What does the app do for the people that download it?
Yeah, so Rappify at its core is a technology platform that services a two-sided marketplace. So everyday consumer drivers that want to earn extra money on their daily commute, as well as ride-sharing drivers that want to earn extra money while they're doing that as well. And then on the brand side, on the advertiser side, you know, big brands, as well as, you know, SMB, mom and pop brands that want to leverage car wrapping as a scalable ad medium across the country. So we're the first company that has actually built a technology platform to facilitate this two-sided marketplace. And we play in the sharing economy.
So how does the app facilitate the technology? What does it do for the drivers that download it?
Sure. So when a driver downloads the app, we log their driving activity. We use that data to match them with campaigns when they become available. So for instance, in San Diego, when a brand like ESET, for instance, builds out a campaign.
Nice plug you got in there, because we're broadcasting from the ESET studios, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
So when the brand actually creates a geofence, so they select what part of town they want to be in, that actually allows us to locate which drivers are going to actually be the right drivers for that campaign. They get notified via the Rappify app. And that's how they actually get onboarded onto a campaign.
Did you just say geofence?
I did.
That's a new... Okay. Word of the week. We need to make that a word of the week. I've not heard that one yet. What is a geofence?
A geofence is essentially a number of coordinates, lat-long coordinates, that create a polygon on a map. And that polygon sits, in several square miles of a map and fences in the area that you want the campaign to be live.
So
Why would the company be determining themselves what location? Wouldn't you just tell them, based on the data, this is where you're going to get seen the most?
We absolutely do that. But sometimes it depends on the initiative of the company. Sometimes they have a list of zip codes that they're targeting because they need brand lift in those zips. So they might have data around that. We actually do provide demographic information based on what their core demographic is, and we'll help them define the geofence. But sometimes, you know, it really depends. Sometimes the brand leans on us to define that for them. And sometimes they're like, we really want to hone on this area.
What would be an example of how that works? I'm struggling with how the geography, especially in a local area, would be identified by a major brand. Do they really get down to that level of analysis to have a geographic territory? And what would be, let me think for a second. So Rolls-Royce probably wouldn't advertise in an area where the average income is $50,000.
Exactly.
They would be more interested. So I'm on track with that, right? So they would be more interested in like Rancho Santa Fe, La Jolla, those kinds of areas, right?
Exactly. So we actually have four demographic components today. So average household income, age, sex, and ethnicity. So another example, like say a brand like Anheuser-Busch was targeting the Hispanic audience, and they wanted to hit neighborhoods that had the highest propensity to hit that Hispanic audience. They do this with traditional out-of-home and radio and TV and online. You could do that with Rappify now as well.
So that's pretty cool. How analytic does this get? I mean, do you get down within miles of a neighborhood, or that polygon you were talking about, is that a broad area? I don't know. I mean, how do I identify that on a map? Would you see it as a large area?
It's typically at a minimum 25 square miles.
Okay, so that's a bigger polygon than I was thinking.
Right. We actually do have a smaller polygon that sits within that. We call it hotspots. And what we've done there is we actually will up what the driver is making if they drive within the hotspot. So it allows us to push drivers into a really, really finite, confined area for brands that really want to hone
so
in on
Suzuki
that specific area.
So Suzuki that makes the crotch rockets would advertise near a Navy base as opposed to, again,
exactly.
La Jolla. Because
exactly.
Navy guys drive those more than maybe La Jolla's do.
Right. So they might have a San Diego geofence for their campaign, but they put the hotspot right on MCAS Miramar, right on Camp Pendleton.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, this is kind of on a tangent, but cars, you know, are very visible all the time, and they've been around forever. It sounds like the technology has finally caught up to make this kind of idea feasible. Right. Why are you guys, what are you guys doing that's so different that allows you to do it successfully, whereas other people, I imagine people have been wanting to advertise on the sides of cars for years, and maybe they did it on a micro level, but you've now expanded that to where it sounds like you can do it just about anywhere.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So we're the first company to actually make this a scale advertising medium. Branding on vehicles is something that has been around for a long time, but it's never really been a scalable ad medium. So,
James Heller, CEO Rappify, thanks for holding on for a second. We're going to get back to that right after these words. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you dare go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET studios. ESET Internet Security. Do more. Want a podcast of the show? Of course you do. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Glad you're with us today. Rappify's in studio. We're going to be talking with Water Pigeon. Another great story coming up at the bottom of the hour, but let's get back to James Heller, CEO of Rappify. During the break, we asked you some questions that we're going to re-ask now because they were really good. Aaron, you were asking about the tech and why it hasn't been done before.
Yeah. Why now? What is it about your technology and maybe even the physically wrapping the cars that allows you guys to do this successfully, whereas other people might have thought about it but just kind of said not feasible?
Sure. That's a great question. And why now is obviously one of the reasons for why a lot of one of the main questions investors have asked me before, you know, funding Rappify. I think there's three core components. So before Rappify, there were several companies that tried to do similar things, but there was never really any tech to support it. The advent of the sharing economy, so the advent of Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, those types of companies, the social acceptance of doing something on the side or getting paid to do a 1099 task. I mean,
what we call the gig economy, right?
The gig or sharing economy. I mean, 10 years ago, if somebody were to tell you, hey, you're going to use your phone to pay to get from point A to point B in a stranger's car, that would have sounded insane. Today, that's totally normal. So that was a big, big step towards getting Rappify, making Rappify feasible. The iPhone and the being able to actually build an app to be able to track people and be able to actually provide data back to an advertiser, that, you know, that ecosystem really needed to exist. The technology in the film space, so the actual sticker that is applied to the vehicle, I never thought I'd know as much as I know about stickers, adhesives.
Adhesives, yes. I mean, who knew you were going to learn about adhesives,
no,
right?
Never thought in a million years I'd know this much about
Just out
stickers.
Of curiosity, is there a big difference in adhesives for wrapping a car? Is that like a technology all on its own?
Oh yes.
And is it revolutionized these days? Are there new technologies and chemicals out?
Yeah, we actually, so our most recent round was led by Avery Dennison, and we co-developed.
Wait a minute, Avery Dennison makes the labels.
Yep.
So they know a little bit about sticking things on things.
A little bit about it, yeah.
Because they've done that for years. What a great idea.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
They're in the business then, right?
Yeah, they're a leader in the material space for wrapping vehicles amongst the labeling and graphic space.
Who would have guessed when you pick up a box of labels you're going to stick on envelopes that they're the ones that make the stickum and the stuff? Do they actually make the film too, or just the
No, they actually manufacture the film. So there's three core components of the film. There's the adhesive, there's the laminate, and the over-laminate. And those three things have had so much refinement, and there's so much technology that goes into them. The delta between too sticky and not sticky enough is like,
wow,
like hair thin. I thought it was like this. So yeah, making sure that, you know,
so you don't go out there and just slather the car in Elmer's glue and lay it
right,
on, right?
It's
and you don't want to, when you're taking it off, you don't want to be peeling off the paint of the car that, you know,
exactly.
for the individual.
No, it needs to be safe on the car.
So many questions and so little time here. I want to talk about the brands, but just real quick, because there's a lot of people out there thinking, can I do this? If somebody's interested in doing this on their car, they can make a little bit of extra money if they drive in the right places at the right times, correct?
Absolutely.
How do they get started? They download the app first?
Yeah, so we're live in the Apple App Store as well as Google Play. So if you're an Android or an iOS user, download the Rappify app. Once you log some initial miles, we use that data to match you with campaigns in your area. When a campaign becomes available, if it's a brand that you want on your vehicle, you opt into it. We get your car wrapped, and we pay every 2 weeks.
Seriously, how much can somebody make if they drive in the right places?
Our average drivers make between $300 and $400 a month just for
the
regular
driving.
That's a
car payment.
Yeah. Car
that's
payment,
pretty
gas
cool.
insurance.
That's pretty cool. The length of time people have to sign up for?
So that's dependent on how long the campaign is. Our shortest campaigns are 4 weeks. Our average campaigns are 12 weeks. And our longest campaigns are 52 weeks.
So how do you know when somebody actually, if somebody gets a wrap on their car, how do you know they actually drive in the places they say they're driving?
So the Rappify app needs to be on their phone, first
right.
of all. Second of all, we actually embed a beacon in the wrap, and that allows us to know that they're in their wrap vehicle versus sitting in the back seat of an Uber or a Lyft or riding their bike or sitting on a train.
So it's in the wrap, not you don't chip the person.
No.
And that's coming
beforehand,
though, I bet.
You actually, they have to take pictures of their car every week or two to send back that is time-stamped, and the picture has to be through your app, right?
Right. So every 2 weeks before their direct deposit, they have to submit photos of their car to make sure that it's in good shape. We use it to, you know, obviously ensure that the brand is being represented the best light possible. And also, yeah, we want to make sure that every one of these cars looks fantastic.
And they have to keep it clean, obviously, yep. right? How does a brand know? Because there's so many medium to advertise on today. How does a brand know that Rappify's giving them the results they're hoping for?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So we're one of the first out-of-home advertising platforms, so outdoor advertising platforms, that provides live data analytics and real-time access to a dashboard online where they could see where these cars are driving, how many impressions they're garnering, as well as a handful of other features.
Because it's a mobile billboard.
Right.
And billboards don't provide that data.
They do, but it's not as granular.
Okay.
So one of the things that I was fascinated by when we first started this was how archaic the billboard industry is in the way that they measure their performance. So we actually leverage live data that we get from some of the biggest traffic data providers in the world, anonymized data that we get from those types of data providers. And we use that data to see how many people are within a viewable radius of each one of these vehicles as it travels down the road. That's what our patent covers.
So they're buying impressions then?
They're buying vehicles on the road, and we're providing them with that impression data.
And how do you when you talk to a brand, do you know ahead of time what you're talking to them about in terms of impressions? Do you have the data that can give that to them?
Yeah, so we provide estimates as to, you know, how many impressions this campaign
does that
should
come
generate.
From your Repify app?
It comes from the data that we've garnered. Yeah.
Is a lot of it from the app itself, or do you pull in data from other sources like Waze and those other map systems?
Yeah, so we pull in data from a traffic provider called Inrix. So they're the gold standard for traffic data. And we use that data and we pair it with some industry standard knowledge around how many people are within that radius. And that's how we provide estimates before a campaign.
So Nielsen owns Arbitron, which is the old radio station, right? Like rating system. Is there that for traffic? I mean, does your industry have like a Nielsen rating system at all? Or are we going to invent that right now?
So that's one of the problems with this industry. In out-of-home advertising, there is a Nielsen for that, but they don't do it for anything that's moving.
So we can invent it.
If you want to invent it, I will become a paying customer.
Whoa!
Third party metrics.
I don't know how to do that, but let's invent the Nielsen rating for cars, right?
The average commuter here in San Diego, how many people are seeing their car on any given day? Like, I'm curious when I'm driving, because is that something, if I were to download the app, even if I didn't want to use your services, would it tell me how many people are seeing my car on any given day?
That's an interesting feature request. So we have that, you know, maybe one day, but not today.
So you want to know how many people are looking?
Well, I'm just curious on average, if somebody said I want 50,000 impressions, how many cars does that need to order to get those 50,000?
Rapify's in studio. James Heller is the CEO. We've got one more segment left. I can't believe how time goes by so quickly here. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
We'll be right back, folks. Don't you go anywhere.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN 1700, but did you know you could watch us too? Watch us on Facebook, visit our Biz Talk Radio page, share your comments, ask your questions, and of course, Bob always appreciates your likes and shares. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Please like me.
Yes, like Bob.
I haven't said that since I was a kid in elementary school. Please like me.
Until every day of this,
till
this
now.
Show.
Yeah.
We're begging for likes.
I know. James Heller's with us, CEO of Repify. At the bottom of the hour, Water Pigeons here. Great story as well. Let's get back to James Heller of Repify. Thanks again for coming in, James.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Again, over the break, we talked more. You were asking about brands, Aaron.
Yeah, well, we got
into really
it.
Good questions during the break.
Well, we started talking about it before we went to the break, and I was trying to get an idea. If I was looking to advertise in San Diego, and I wanted to, I don't even know what a big number, I wanted 100,000 or a million people to see my advertisement, how many cars would have to be wrapped in the San Diego, like just say greater San Diego area, in order for me to expect that kind of number for a 4-week or a 12-week program?
Sure. No, and these are equations that we definitely work out when we're building a campaign for a brand. In a city like San Diego, where it's very commuter-centric, 15,000 impressions or 15,000 impressions on a daily basis per vehicle is kind of could be average.
Whoa,
you're
that's a
me.
Lot.
Yeah. Now, if you look at cities that are a little more rural, obviously that number will decrease. And then you look at cities like L.A. where you're the traffic congestion is crazy.
Because you could drive all day long in Julian and probably not get a lot.
Right.
Yeah. So the brands that you have advertising now, I know you have a fair amount of these people that are the brands that are working with you. Have you had any really big surprises in the brands that have hired you to do this? Are there any ahas that, like, I can't believe these people are doing this because it's way different than I thought? Or do all the brands that advertise with you make so much sense that there's no ahas? Is that even a good question? I'm not even sure that's a great question.
That's a question I haven't been asked, but it is a good question. We've had brands that are so... That are not consumer brands, that are so obscure and their audience is so finite that I thought it was interesting.
Okay, so can you tell names? I mean, do you have any names on that?
There's a company called Tipalti, and they do accounts payable. They're an accounts payable platform. Really cool platform. But I thought it was interesting that they were leveraging out of home to get the word out.
Well, that is interesting. Yeah. They're a B2B,
right?
Obviously, and yet they're doing consumer type advertising,
right? But we do have a lot of B2B brands on the platform. I mean, ESET, for instance, a lot of what they do is B2B. It's not just B2C. And then also going back to like interesting brands. I mean, a lot of people marrying an alcohol brand with a car could be, you know, kind of scary. And, you know, Anheuser-Busch, for instance, they're always on the leading edge of doing these types of things sometimes. But they're actually leveraging our medium to raise awareness for consumer social responsibility and not drinking and driving by leveraging our branding platform.
That's a great place to do it too. Yeah. On
cars. So
they're
looking to build some goodwill then.
Yeah.
We've talked about some really big brands. Well, and one obscure one. Where would you guys start if somebody owned a local restaurant and had a $5,000 annual marketing budget, advertising budget? Wouldn't this make sense for them? What's kind of the starting point for you guys?
Sure. That we would probably tell them that they could spend their money elsewhere. But we do have smaller brands on the platform. I'd say this, you know, our average campaigns could be up well over $100,000. Small brands have put campaigns on the road for, you know, 20 grand.
So these are not necessarily local companies. They're generally regional or national companies that are going to be doing this.
Yeah, not necessarily. But I mean, just like radio advertising, you might have some local brands on your platform that have smaller spots, whereas you have some bigger national brands that have bigger spots. So very similar.
And the results that they get, because you can determine how many impressions they get, it's actually calculable as opposed to some other media where it's not easy to figure out how many people are actually getting the impressions.
Exactly. And not just the measurement, but we're also trying to close the gap from branding platform all the way to a platform where you can actually have some direct attribution. So some really interesting features that we're working on for 2018.
For promotional purposes, I mean, it sounds like most of the people who are going to be doing this as drivers, they're going to be it wouldn't make sense for them to go out and just drive solely for the purpose of making money because their car's wrapped. But this would be during their normal commute. Can you guys do anything really neat from a promotional standpoint, meaning we might pay drivers more and have them go somewhere? I'm thinking right, yeah. All these cars would then descend on Times Square,
right.
And it's this big media event or promotional
flash
event.
Mob.
Flash mob of cars.
That is exactly what Swarm is.
Seriously.
So Swarm is the most used feature on our platform, and we actually did exactly what you just said.
Wait a minute. Actually have a feature that called Swarm.
Called Swarm, yeah.
That
so Rapify Swarm.
Flash mob Swarm. That is so cool.
Yeah,
and that actually exists.
Yeah, and we've actually done that in Times Square.
So what was the brand?
Seriously.
And what were they hoping to accomplish with that?
We've actually done some really interesting things with Swarm. So, for instance, we had a campaign on the road for Trinet, another B2B platform, and they leveraged Swarm to drive around their competitor's event during registration hours. So they had all their reps rather than paying for a sponsorship.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so we've done that. ESET's leveraging Swarm for Cybersecurity Month. So we have Swarm is layered into campaigns. Drivers get paid an additional amount on a per hour basis to opt into Swarm. Some of our drivers have made almost upwards of $1,000 on a monthly basis opting into Swarms while doing their regular driving. So it is possible to make a little bit extra when you're opting into a Swarm, but it is an opt-in. It's on an opt-in basis.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to do tractor trailers?
We're not focused on tractor trailers. Our core mission is putting cash back in the pockets of everyday American consumers.
Well, that's an interesting model then. So it's not the size of the vehicle.
Yeah, there are other people that do that, though.
Oh, there are.
Yeah.
I'm guessing so. So where are you going? Where is Rapify going? What are the cool things that you see in the future for you?
Yeah, so I think the feature that we're most focused on developing right now is the ability to retarget an audience that was exposed to a wrapped vehicle. So you saw the ESET car in San Diego, you flip open Instagram and you're seeing a contextually relevant ad to what you saw.
So how would you know to retarget that person that saw the ESET wrapped vehicle?
We're starting to get into some NDA territory, but the ability to know that somebody with that device was within a close enough proximity at that timestamp, and we're able to segment that audience and put them into an ad platform and be able to actually serve them banner
ads. Okay, this is seriously fascinating what you can do now. So the technology really has gone well beyond Google looking at our searches and giving us contextually sensitive ads.
Absolutely.
We're way beyond that now.
And Google's actually an advertiser on our platform, so they just ran a campaign for Wave.
Do you have capacity for more brand advertisers?
Oh yes.
So there's a few cars yet not wrapped in the world?
There's a few cars.
Any chance you're going to go outside the United States at some point in time?
I expect that answer to be yes soon. We're really focused on the U.S. market today, but international expansion is something we're thinking about.
So if you go to England, you put the wrap on the other side of the car?
We put the wrap
on the car. Okay, that was a silly joke. I know that.
That was one of your better ones, actually. I kind of like that.
Did you? James Heller, thank you so much. Wrapify is your company. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Up next, Water Pigeon. When we get back, Clay Malugin will be with us talking about an interesting technology for your water delivery. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Stay with us, folks. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We'd like to take this moment to thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, our music by Derek Audette, our interns, Sarah, Andrew, Leah, Deidre, and Chrissy. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. What a great story Wrapify is. Are you going to get your cars wrapped?
I'd like to.
It would be interesting.
I've got a kid on the way. I need all the extra income I can get.
That's right.
Huggies.
Ooh, I wonder if you could brand your child.
Brand your child. Well, I'll have to ask him if he'll wrap my child.
You got to get it by the wife first.
Okay, now that just opened up a whole can of worms. Wrap your child. You could brand your child.
Brand
somehow.
The diapers. Yeah. Clay had it right.
Yeah. So let's move on. Water Pigeon's with us. Clay Malugin is with us. He is at the helm of a company called Water Pigeon, which you probably have not heard about yet, but I'm guessing you will at some point in time. Clay, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Your company is called Water Pigeon. That's a really interesting name. Tell everybody what you guys do.
We read water meters, essentially. So today, there's somebody who walks around the neighborhood in San Diego. Every 2 months, they come by, they read your water meter, they type 4 digits in a computer. And they move on to the next house. You get your bill about 3 weeks after that, and then you find out you have a leak.
Seriously, and that's how we've been doing this for
ever.
Ever. Forever. Okay.
So somebody physically goes by,
yes,
and looks at the water meter right now.
Yes.
Do they actually take the top off of the water meter box and look inside, or do they have another way to do it?
No, they have very specific requirements. The person has to be able to see the meter while standing up. So he doesn't even bend over.
Really?
He has a pole that he sticks in, pulls out
through
the
little hole in the top of the cover of the water meter box.
Yeah.
And that's how they do it currently.
That's how they do it.
I've never seen anybody do that.
Oh.
I'm sure they come around and do it. I just never see him do it.
Well, he probably knows your wife.
Yeah. So, yeah. opens up a whole. Talk about the mailman. We're going to be talking about the water meter guy from now on, right? Yeah.
So if I have a leak, then and it's not visible in my home, meaning my toilet is not physically overflowing.
Right.
I might never know it until I get a bill.
And or if it's a slow leak, you might never know it at all because the bill just goes up incrementally and you wouldn't even know you're using a little
bit. But I don't know you very well, but your first bill that you get's kind of high, you're going to go out and turn down your irrigation system. But it's actually a slab leak inside your slab in the house and it's going straight in the ground. You never see it. So most people ignore the first high bill and then the second bill comes and it's even higher. Then they call up the water company and complain.
And there's people like me that never read their bills, ever.
Yeah, I imagine somebody you don't get any money back either. There's no refund.
No
to
rebate
you
for losing water. Yeah.
No, there's no rebate for being stupid. So,
or ignorant like me. So Water Pigeon reads meters. Now that when you say it like that, it sounds like as exciting as watching paint dry. Reading water meters doesn't sound exciting at all.
I'm pretty into it, though.
You are.
I can tell.
But there's got to be something interesting about the way you're doing it, or you wouldn't have a business called Water Pigeon that reads meters. Tell us what you guys are doing differently than the traditional person that walks by and sticks something down the little hole there and figures out how much water they're using.
First off, we get him a new job.
Okay.
Right? But what we do is we looked at why automated water meters are like the whole rage. Every utility is looking at them, but nobody puts them in. So we talked to them and found out, why don't you put these in? City of San Diego is putting a system in. It's going to take them another 5 years to deploy it on 200,000 meters.
What is an automated meter?
An automated meter is real simple. It's the same meter you have with the digital output.
Right.
They plug it into a radio. They mount an antenna on your meter box, and then they build a wireless network. cost about $500 to $750.
So they actually have to take the meter out of the box, put another meter in that has a wireless transmitter in it.
Yeah, and if they're doing it right, they turn the water off first.
That could be a mess if they don't, right?
Yeah, so I met a guy the other probably about a year ago down in North Park. He was going down the street. He had to put 12 meters in. That was his job for the day. It's a very labor-intensive process to change out all the equipment.
But you have to turn off the water to the resident.
Yep.
And then you have to take out the old meter, put the new meter in.
Put the new meter in. So what we decided was, we looked at it, it's really expensive, which holds a lot of utilities. 70% of the utilities just opt out because it's too expensive.
What does it cost to do that again?
Between $500 and $750 per meter. Yes.
And just out of curiosity, in an average water district, how many meters are there? Well, I mean, are we talking hundreds, thousands, tens of?
San Diego has about 700,000 water meters.
700,000.
Right.
Times $500.
Right.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's why we're in the business.
Okay. So you've got a better way to do it.
Yeah, what we do, instead of replacing all the equipment, because the meter you have is probably accurate. And if it's not accurate, we can tell if it's not. But what we do is we walk by. You know that lid the guy takes off?
Right.
We take that lid off. We put our lid on. We activate it with a magnet, which starts the process. And for the next 20 years, it optically reads the meter. We run OCR software, optical character recognition. So we capture the information off the meter, store it up, and forward it up to the cloud.
So the lid that's on there now is a cement lid, right?
Yes.
A manufactured cement lid. And there's nothing in that. It's just a piece of cement that covers the thing. So
correct.
You pull that off. You put another one on that's Water Pigeon's
lid
to it, right? Made of plastic, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then in the bottom of that lid, underneath, there's some kind of device that can read the meter that's down below?
Yeah. Into the lid, we integrate an electronics package, which has a camera which can optically image the face of the meter. And then we run OCR and pull the data back.
So it's just taking pictures. So it doesn't actually have to integrate with that technology. It has to just visibly be able to see it.
Yes.
And let me guess, it costs a lot less to lift a lid off and put another lid on than it does to lift a lid off, take the meter out, put another meter, and put the lid back on.
Yeah. So instead of $500 to $750, it's $200. It installs in less than a minute. So take a place like Santa Fe Irrigation District, Rancho Santa Fe. They're going to spend the next 5 years rolling out a system that's $750 per meter box. We could have gone in and in 6 months put in our system at $200 per meter box.
So the bottom of the lid that you guys put on there has a device that reads the meter. Is it a camera? Like a webcam type thing that we might be familiar with?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a small camera like that?
Exactly.
And it does it read it accurately all the time?
Yeah. Why not?
I don't know. I mean, it just it seems like that might have. There's no shadows. What about light? How does it read it when there's no light in there?
Oh, I should have thought of that. Oh, wait.
Oh, my gosh.
It does read in the dark.
Yeah. Actually, no. We turn lights on in the box.
No way.
You can use infrared, which people can't see. You can use visible light. I mean, the camera's designed, it can read infrared. We can run visible light. So we basically, for a blink of an eye, we turn on the light.
And then it takes a picture of it, and it translates that picture into
exactly.
useful data.
Yeah.
That then what happens to it?
It gets processed. We turn it into data.
Right.
And then we forward it up to our cloud. And in our cloud is where the magic really
happens. Okay. How does it get from the lid, from the camera, up to the cloud?
Oh, it's a pigeon. It flies back.
Again.
You set yourself up every single
time. I know.
So a lot of water jokes
here, right?
Right. So we work in water and call it a pigeon. Pigeons were the first wireless data carriers, and that's why we picked the name.
Yeah, Water Pigeon is with us. Clay Malugin is here. It's a company that actually replaces the meter reader and the meter that's going to become automated inside with a lid. You're going to hear more about this story. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Stay with us, folks. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. Get a podcast of today's show and any of our previous shows. Now we're talking. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Water Pigeon's in studio with us, Clay Malugin. You got a great sense of humor. I got to admit that. It's almost drier than mine, which really doesn't happen very often.
It's really hard to meet someone like that, too.
Yes, and for a guy that's in the water business, a dry sense of humor.
Is an oxymoron.
Nice. There you
okay,
go.
That was good. Come on now.
That was very good.
It's a holiday. You got to laugh at the jokes on a holiday. So we just to recap real quick. Water meters right now require a human to come by and read each meter once a month, correct?
Yes, about 90% of them are still done that way.
Okay. And there are companies that make automated meters that send data out, but basically somebody has to go through, pull the old, first of all, turn off the water, pull the old meter out, put the new meter in, put the cap back on, turn the water back on, and that costs how much per meter, ballpark?
$500 to $750, but they have to build a private wireless network to do it.
Oh, that's on top of the fact that they've got to replace it all.
Yeah, yeah.
So that expense can get up there for, I'm guessing, a water district. You said there's 700,000 in San Diego?
Yes.
Of these meters?
Yeah, so you have the city of San Diego Water, but right. There's actually 24 water districts in San Diego, like Santa Fe, Poway, Escondido, Oceanside, Valley Center. So they're each their own independent water districts.
And each one of those has to manage this independently from the others, right?
Yes.
So what you've developed at Water Pigeon is a lid that underneath the lid, it has a, I'm looking at it right now, it's kind of like a large GoPro cover case.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing the case is waterproof.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
So the case is waterproof. In the case, there's a camera and a motherboard and a battery, mm-hmm. right? And that camera takes a picture of the meter and sends that data up into the cloud.
Right. And we use the cellular network.
Yeah, we were asking before that how you get it from the camera that's in the lid to the cloud, and you use the cellular network.
Yeah.
So you don't have to build out a private network.
No.
Use an existing cellular network.
Actually, what's really funny, I've done a lot of work. I was with Intel and a lot of other wireless companies.
Intel, is that a good company? I mean,
it's okay.
It's okay.
They bought us. I left. But when you build your own network,
that's
a huge cost, and then you have to maintain the network. So when we did this, my business partner, Sarp, and I, we met at San Diego Startup Week, and he was on the idea of how do you do this better. And we looked at the cost, and the cost is outrageous. So everything we did was to lower the life cycle cost of reading water meters. Comparing ourselves to these new automated systems, we wanted to be half the cost over a 20-year life cycle, and that's what we achieved.
What powers this? I see a battery. It looks like a D-cell battery.
Yeah, it's a D-cell battery.
How long does that thing last?
It lasts 20 years.
That battery lasts 20 years?
Yeah.
How come the batteries I put in stuff don't last 20 years?
You buy cheap batteries.
This one's expensive, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's designed for products like this. This is, you know when you go to the bathroom and you wash your hands and the faucet turns on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know that's a battery?
No.
It's that battery.
I really? Thought it was a little man underneath the sink that turned it on when you walked up there.
No, guy's got a camera.
Okay.
And so what's being asked of it, too, is fairly minimal, right? You're taking a picture. But then does it take a lot of energy to send the data, or is that separate from the
That's
battery?
A really good question. I did research on this for 2 years because I wanted to figure out how do you make a 3G cellular modem run for 20 years on a D-cell battery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that when I was working for the wireless companies. And we figured out getting on and off the network uses 70% of the energy out of the battery.
So just stay on the network?
The amount of data you send was fairly irrelevant other than data cost. So what we did is we figured out how you actually manage the battery that's consumed. So we can actually, every time the unit runs, we forecast how much energy was taken out of the battery. And then we know how much the battery decays.
Seriously?
Over time. Yeah.
That's pretty smart.
So we could read your meter 6 times a day, which allows us to do leak detection multiple times per day, and break your day up so that you can get information that says, okay, I used this much water while I was asleep. We call that a leak.
Mm-hmm.
How much did I use in the morning? How much in the afternoon?
Right.
And then how much at night? We've also, we've patented it.
So
I almost said a bad word. We patented a lot.
So the couple of questions. Number one, what happens if somebody steals the lid? Because if you've got technology in there and that battery lasts 20 years, I might want that battery, so I might steal the lid. Well, not me, but somebody's thinking that.
Okay, so there's two things that come up with utilities.
Right.
One is theft, and the other one is floating away if they have a flood.
Right.
So
you mean the lid floating away if it's flooded?
Yeah, literally.
That's an interesting idea, yes.
So we put a steel cable on that you can mount it to the box.
Right.
But anything you put on, someone can take off.
Right.
Right. So we can actually locate the unit. There's a lot of technologies out. There's a technology called PULTE, position over LTE. It can locate a device within 3 meters, and it does it with one ping on the network.
Oh, this is what Qualcomm used to manufacture that went into the railroad cars.
No.
That was
GPS.
Oh, that
Via
was GPS.
Set,
this
I think
is different.
What you're talking about.
Yeah. It doesn't even require GPS or anything.
So how does it locate it? Does it? It just pings. It just sends a signal.
It sends out a ping. You triangulate with the cellular towers.
Oh, so you don't even need GPS because you triangulate.
Yeah. It's a really cool technology, PULTE. You can use cell ID just based upon which cell site you're talking to. Everywhere we put this in, it sees 12 cell sites. So why build a network when you're
when you've already got it,
12,
and you can try? So somebody steals that, you can know where it's at and go get it.
Does the utility company, do they carry the cost of all of this, or does that somehow get passed on to the consumer?
Well, it's a public service, so yes, you pay.
There's an incentive, obviously, always to keep costs as low as possible.
You know, utilities are really great. They actually want to deliver a high quality service, and you want them to do that,
right?
So they treat your sewage, they treat your water, not in the same place. You know, they separate those two out, but they take care that you get clean water into your house, and then they take away what you don't use. One of the things we did is we integrated it with your irrigation system. If you have a smart irrigation controller, they're miserable to set up. So I've been talking to them, and one thing we found was I can automate the setup. You put the smart irrigation controller in, you walk outside, you say, okay, I have this pigeon on my pit, and it automates the setup. It automatically will tell you how much water you put on zones. Every time you do your irrigation system, it looks to see if your irrigation system's running properly. Is it not watering enough, like it's got a bad valve, or is it running and putting much too water on, like it's got a popped head or a broken pipe? So we took leak detection beyond just you're using more water. We took it down to where are the leaks coming from.
Water pigeons in studio with us. What happens if the box, the underneath the lid, if that fills up with water? Because I've had times where the pipe breaks right around the box fills. How can it read it then? Because it's got water over the meter.
It's kind of like a scuba mask.
Yeah.
You can actually look right through the water and read the meter.
Seriously.
Yeah. In many places, we've seen meter boxes fill up, and the first thing you know, if there's a little bit of dirt in there, you'll see the dirt's moving around from image to image. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good idea.
Oh, yeah. But now, who looks at these?
I do.
You see them.
Yeah, the very first prototype we went out, we didn't have the OCR yet. Now we're bringing the automation in so we can detect all these things.
Wow. Clay Malugin, thank you so much. Water Pigeon, we're going to talk more about this. I want to find out if you're ever going to be able to turn your water off remotely with this when we get back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
One more segment, folks. Don't you go anywhere. Great holiday together. Stay with us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Tomorrow, our guest will be Brandon Fishman, Internet Marketing, Inc., and Deborah Sweet will be with us from Thrive Right Consulting. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Glad you're with us. Clay Malugin is here. Water Pigeon is the company. Company makes a product that replaces the lid of your water meter box. And that lid that you put on has a camera in it and a battery. And it takes pictures of your meter, translates the information, sends it wirelessly through the cellular network. So there's very little cost involved in this. And it costs a few bucks to do this, but much less than other automated systems that are replacing it. So congratulations, Clay, for getting this far with it. I mean, this is pretty
Thank
cool.
You. Yeah, now, it's fun too.
I bet water's an important thing in the world right now. I mean, it's one of the most important things around the world to make sure we deliver to people, because it's something that holds everything back. So it is really a cool technology. I was kind of joking when we went to the commercial break about whether you'd be able to use this to ever turn off your water if you left it on like we did one day when we left the house. And you said during the break that technology might be available to us at some point.
You know, water utilities hate turning off your water. If you don't pay your bill, they go out, they put a notice on the door, because water's a life-sustaining force.
Right.
So
nobody wants
like,
to do that to somebody.
You know, not until, I mean, even if you have a massive leak and they detect it, they'll run out and actually turn your water off and make sure everyone's okay. But they don't like turning your water off. Water Pigeon, you know, when we put the lids in, when you tell someone how much water they use on a daily basis, they automatically, on a population study, reduce 16%.
No.
Yes.
Just after telling them.
Just by knowing it. Because how much water do you use? I'm going to ask you. How much water do you use?
No clue.
Okay.
Not even a little
clue. Is your water bill too high?
I have no idea.
Yes, it always is too high.
can we start
Montana
off with
Montana would know. I really don't know.
What's too high? You know, yeah. Most people look at their water bill. They don't realize that your sewage is on your water bill also. So you're paying to treat the water that goes out.
See, you could have asked me that. I wouldn't have known that either. I don't look at bills ever. So I'm the wrong guy to ask. Montana would be the person.
Right. So if you want to reduce your sewer bill, you actually have to not water as much during the winter.
Yes.
So that's why you put a smart irrigation controller in that in the winter knows you don't need to water.
And this is some technology that's available or will be available.
It is available.
It is available.
Yeah.
So where are you at with Water Pigeon now? Is this a new technology that you're just bringing to market? Do you actually have it installed some places at this point? Where are we at in the process?
Okay. So we started the development process in late 2015.
Okay.
We entered the EvoNexus incubator last August, and we did our first pilot with four water utilities in San Diego. The San Diego County Water Authority got behind us, helped us arrange pilots. We ran the first pilot, and I wasn't joking about we physically looked at all the images and read them initially, and now we do OCR so we can automatically read the meters without a human intervening. So we completed that pilot, and we had very good success. We learned a lot in the pilot.
How many meters were in the pilots?
I think we were on 96 meters.
Okay, that's a fairly good number.
Yeah, we actually had 20 units out there, but we moved them around continuously so we could try different situations. We tried flooded pits. We tried pits which were
so you call the box
the
a pit?
Yes.
The box that goes around your water meter, you call that a pit?
I call it a pit, but everyone else calls it a box. Yeah.
So it's not. I thought we were coming into some industry vernacular.
Oh.
But that's just yours.
Yes. That's. It looks like a pit when you look in it.
Yeah, there we go.
By the way, you know that hole in the top of the meter cover?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Never stick your finger in it.
Because it gets stuck?
No, black widow spiders.
No way.
I thought you were going to say snakes.
No, we find snakes. We
scorpions,
find frogs.
Brown recluse.
Roaches. We find everything.
Now, why would
boxes.
Somebody stick their finger? Oh, I've stuck my finger in before to try to lift it up with your finger.
Yeah, because that's where your valve is. So if last ditch to turn the water to your house off in case your valve in the house doesn't work or the main broke between your meter and the house, you have to go in there and hit that, turn that valve to turn off your water.
Hmm.
That's your last hope.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't stick your finger in the little hole in the top of the.
Yeah. If you do stick it in and something bites it, then you pull it out.
pull it back I imagine out. The macro data you're going to get is one of the most exciting things. Do we have an idea of how much water waste there is, like in micro communities or even in San Diego as a whole?
No, there's two kinds of things. So since we read in a synchronized manner, I can read everyone's water meter in the same second in an entire city.
I'm a little confused by that.
So every unit operates independently,
mm-hmm.
so it all knows the time. So we know exactly the time of the day. We sync it to the cellular network, so we can read all the water meters at the same time. The utility likes that because they know how much water they put into the meter system. So if we can do it from the beginning of 1 hour to the beginning of the next hour, they know how much they put in. We know how much went out.
Everything so if there's leaks in their system, you can detect that.
Yes.
That's got to be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, and one of the other things they like is unaccounted for or non-revenue water is water where a meter is going too slow. So we, through the analytics side, have the ability to bring in analytics so we can tell if someone's water meter is not running as fast as it should be.
Is that because of mechanical failure inside the meter itself?
It can be, yes.
Why else would it go slow?
Because someone's tampered with it.
Oh, people do that.
I have a question for you. Right now, you're talking about all this technology and the lid and everything. This is your baby. This is patented. I get all that. Is the goal to sell these to the water district and you continue to do the analytics? Or is it once you sell it to them, you do this and you're done with it?
Nope.
Or are you doing all the analytics behind and then giving reports to the water district?
Yeah. When you think about a water utility, there's a guy walking around with a computer and he at most once a month. They don't have a system which is designed and set up to take large quantities of data in, like 6 reads a day or 24 reads a day. I mean, we actually had one in my house, and we were reading my water meter every 3 minutes for a week.
Hmm.
Just kind of a
stress
test. So
basically, the water district is getting one check per month per meter.
Yeah. What the utilities want us to do is to pull the data, analyze the data, make the data available to them, and then feed into the billing system what we call the billing read. That one day a month at midnight, your meter gets read.
And then the data of all the reads in between, though, that seems like there would be something you could do with that valuable, like no peak times when water's being used.
Exactly.
Are you ever going to get to the point where there's other tasks that you can perform with these readers, such as checking the quality of the water? Is there a way to do other things with this that you're envisioning at this point?
Not at this point in time, no. Actually, the last mile is what they call it. Getting that data from the meter back is the most important thing. The quality of the water is measured upstream. One thing they do ask us to watch for, and we've actually detected it on some houses, we find leaks at 15% of the houses we install on.
Seriously? Oh, wow. So that's the big piece of data that's the missing element right now in what's happening.
Yeah. Since we just sell to utilities, that's the consumer take back. If you have a leak, they will detect a leak and they'll be able to notify you have a leak.
And since water utilities are utilities and they don't make profits, they're interested in saving money for the consumer. That's kind of their charge.
Yes. Yeah.
They want to do
and
that.
And the guys who read the water meters, they don't necessarily go away. Now all of a sudden you have water pigeon installed and you get it put in. Leaks in 15% of the places.
Most now they can go spend time fixing the leaks.
Yeah, helping people
and saving
with conservation.
Us lots of water.
Yeah, and when you reduce your water use, your sewer bill goes down.
So this is something you can do not just nationwide. Are other countries on the sites with this kind of thing, or are they similar systems in other countries?
Similar systems.
Seriously, yeah. So you could actually take this through all the industrialized countries.
That's a good question. There's 100 million water meters in the United States.
No way.
100 million.
That could take you a year or two.
And the United States is not the most populated country. Wow. When you look at how water is throughout the world, there's a huge market that needs to be served.
Cool. Water pigeon. Clay Malugin, thank you so much. Great idea. Keep up the good work. We'll hopefully see these on our block sometime very soon. You've been listening to Biz Talk, Believing and Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
I want you folks to go have a great and prosperous day. Bye-bye.